Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Another profoundly sad day in Chicago. Funeral services are being held for Tyshawn Lee, the 9-year-old who was lured into an alley and shot to death 8 days ago, police say, in retaliation for his father's involvement in a rival gang. One murder of a 9-year-old should cause outrage, but why are there so many? 400 people murdered with guns in Chicago so far this year, as Chicago police confiscated more than 5,400 illegal guns in the first half of 2015, more than in New York and L.A. combined. We're taking a look with Harold Pollack of the University of Chicago's Crime Lab. Professor, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And Rob Wildebor is with us as well. He's the criminal and legal affairs reporter for WBEZ in Chicago. They're both at the BEZ studios. Rob, welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Robin.
And Professor Pollack, I'm reading a report issued in October of this year, Preventive Medicine, Sources of Guns to Dangerous People, What We Learn by Asking Them. You literally asked people who've used guns both in jail and out. Just briefly touch on, what did you find about where the guns come from?
People who had been caught in gun offenses were pretty frank about the different ways they got guns. On the whole, most of them were pretty unsophisticated about guns. They were not deeply embedded in really sophisticated networks, but they knew someone close to them who could help them get access to a weapon. One of the most discouraging aspects was just how many of them had been personally victims of violence. About 40% of them said that they had been shot in their adult life. And if you say, why are you carrying a gun? You know, they were like, oh, gee, why do you think I'm carrying a gun?
Right.
And there's this sort of arms race where these young guys are armed up because they're afraid of each other. Now, they are very unsophisticated gun consumers. And what's encouraging about that is that we could stop many of these people from getting access to weapons through relatively low-tech means. If the challenge were, let's make sure the Latin kings never get access to guns, we would be in a tough place because they're pretty, you know, people are moving heroin through the United States. They can figure out how to get guns. A lot of these are 19-year-old guys who are mad at another 19-year-old guy, and they know someone who has access to a weapon, and we could really hinder that underground market.
Rob, I want to bring you in because another aspect of what's happening in Chicago you've reported on, the notion that there's so much gun violence in Chicago that it doesn't get reported on.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, news is supposed to be new, right? And if it's an extremely young person or if there's a large number of victims, then that's a front page story. But oftentimes it could be, you know, a 19-year-old man is shot and killed in this city and it merits only a few lines in the newspaper. And it's just part of the air we breathe here. And it is really tragic.
I want to go back to you, Professor Pollack. Again, you've studied, you know, where guns are coming from. What else did you learn about where guns are coming from? Because, as you said, very small percentage were purchased legally.
People do share guns. By the way, the people that we interviewed don't know a heck of a lot about guns. One of the ironies in this is that if many of the Chicago gangs had a big shootout with the Michigan militia would just wipe them out because these guys actually target practice.
I'm going to hold you up there because that's really quite compelling. You're saying that many of the people that your researchers talk to have a gun almost like a somehow magical protection. They don't really even know how to use it.
That is often the case, and I'm sure that's part of why the high-capacity magazines are kind of the one thing that a lot of the offenders really want to have. They really don't have high-powered weapons in the sense that semi-automatic rifles, things like that. Almost all the homicides are just done with regular handguns.
Well, it could also explain why so many children are killed, why there seem to be so many accidental deaths.
Yes, I think that there is something to that. And there's tremendous remorse, by the way, among the people who perpetrate those crimes in many cases. So many of the gun homicides that we see in Chicago are these very prosaic incidents where maybe I'm carrying a gun because I'm in a gang, but then some guy looks at my girlfriend and we get into it and somebody ends up dead. And, these are not evil people by and large that we're talking to, even though some of them have committed pretty serious crimes.
What else are you finding that can interrupt this flow of jobs. I mean, you write that the police in Chicago have done a great job in deterring. How so?
I think offenders are worried that they're going to encounter snitches and you know, various kinds of police undercover activity. They're worried that if they get caught with guns, that they know that the Chicago Police Department puts a high priority on that. But I think also Chicago is a city that's in the – we're a bicycle ride away from Indiana, where gun laws are much more lax. You know, across the city boundary, there are gun stores that the city is working with. It's very difficult for any one city to deal with this problem when you have a national gun market that could be regulated much better through federal policy.
Yeah, you talk about 17 states, including Illinois, yours, impose some regulation on private transfers that go beyond the federal requirements. And most of what you're talking about when the guns change hands in Chicago are private transfers. But you know what gun control critics say, that you could write tons of regulations tightening up private transfers, and it won't matter because, you know, people in the inner city who, as you say, just want to are trying to protect themselves, they're not going to abide by those laws.
Well, I do think that they are correct that we can't oversell any one thing. I think the question is not, will this solve the problem? It's, will this be helpful? And we know that different states, when they've tightened some laws, that it's been helpful. So I think it would be a mistake for anyone to argue that there's any polio vaccine for this problem. But if every private sale had a pretty rigorous background check connected to it, it would be helpful. You know, we do see, as you noted, Chicago recovers more guns than New York and Los Angeles combined. You know, public policy is a part of that.
Well, Rob Bildebor from WBEZ, I want to bring you back in. Chicago has a higher number of murders per capita than New York and L.A. Are people in Chicago more violent, or is it that there are still more illegal guns to go?
Here in Chicago, we've heard various explanations over the last few years from our city leaders as to why the murder rate is higher here. But, you know, we have about 450 murders a year here now. It used to be in 1992, I think we had 943. So we have a lot less violence than we used to. And one of the interesting things is we don't know why. You know, we're down about 50% from where we used to be. New York is down like 80, 85%. Kind of the whole country's come down 50% in terms of violence and homicides. And so I think one of the questions here is, well, what are they doing that we're not? How do we get that extra 30% drop in homicides? And right now we're seeing a spike in violence and murders across the country in many of our cities. And we don't know right now if the spike we're seeing is going to be continuing that downward trend, or if this is like a turning point. And we're not going to know for 10 years whether this is like a pivot to where, violence increased significantly in 2015 again.
Well, I'm looking at a city report from last year, and one of the headlines is Chicago's violence is directly linked to the size of its illegal gun market, and that Chicago is challenged by geography. It's a central location, an easy target for gun traffickers. There's something about how Chicago is positioned that might have something to do with it.
I think that's probably right. One of the things that we found in our work was that the guns that were recovered in gang-related crimes were more likely to come from Indiana than guns that were recovered in other crimes.
We're reminded in the city's report, the City of Chicago report, that the states with the most permissive gun laws are the ones that export crime guns at the highest rates. In other words, guns travel out of those states to other states. So Indiana, Mississippi, West Virginia, Kentucky all have these high rates of guns that leave the state. Chicago, it's an easy target for these gun traffickers who are sending guns from other states. Professor, I'm just wondering, on a human level, do you ever hear anybody talk about, I don't know how to put this, but how unfair that is?
We hear a lot about that. In fact, we heard a lot about that from the offenders that we interviewed in the jail. And they're saying, you know, where are all these guns coming from, and why hasn't somebody done a better job of clamping that down? It is one of the ironies in the public debate is we sort of think of the right as the law and order group of people and the left as the sort of more soft on crime people. When it comes to guns, many of the people in the low-income communities that you know, that one talks to, you know, will say, "Hey, why is it that we haven't done a better job of getting at the people who are trafficking in guns?" And we don't have a gun factory here in this neighborhood, is the kind of comment that that one often hears.
That's Harold Pollack, co-director of the University of Chicago's Crime Lab. And we've also been speaking with Rob Wildebor, criminal and legal affairs reporter for WBEZ. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thanks, Robin.
Thank you.